Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Back to another episode of 3GT. That's three guys theologizing, where three gentlemen get together and we talk about various topics, all from a Christian perspective with an eye toward Reformed theology. I am Scott Hunt, your host for today, joined as always by my two friends and co-hosts, Kyle Borg and Barry York. Kyle, how are you doing today? How was that?
You know, Scott, that was a stellar introduction.
From my diaphragm, not from my throat.
That's right. That's the way you preserve vocal cords. And, you know, today's going very good. He might not say it himself, but it is a very special day today for us here at Three Guys Theologizing, because it is somebody's birthday.
Happy birthday, you special somebody.
You special somebody. Who is that special somebody, you might ask? It's Barry York. Barry, this is your birthday song. It isn't very long. Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you, guys.
Barry, how are you doing on this great day?
I'm doing well, thank you. I was surprised here at RPTS by my wife and daughter with a special treats after chapel today. And so it's been a good day. But I'm here all day. I'm going to teach after this. So I'm going to celebrate tomorrow night, I think, more with my grandsons over.
Well, that's fun. That's an exciting, good time to be with your grandkids. And
yep.
How old are you?
I am 62.
My goodness, he's a boomer.
I am a boomer.
That explains a lot.
A lot. And it's going to explain why he might miss this next reference, or the first reference I'm going to make. But we're just going to jump right into the topics. I understand people don't like all the fluff at the beginning, and they just want us to get down to business. We got an email from a listener, which we appreciate getting, and he had a topic that he thought it might be good for us to talk about. In that time, I'm not going to read the email or give this gentleman's name, though. He is a namesake of my oldest son. So if you know my oldest son, you'll know his first name anyway. But the issue that we're going to talk about today is cliques in the church. And, you know, you think about cliques. You both went to public schools, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but I think we established on a previous episode, I don't call them public schools. I call them government schools. Right. But yes, I went to government school.
Barry, you and I went to public school. Kyle went to some government school. But you know, I remember just walking into, I wasn't the most popular kid in school.
You don't say.
I know. That shocks Kyle. but you know, you walk into the lunchroom and you have the different tables, right? You have the jocks at one table, the band people at another table, the cheerleaders usually sitting with you. You know, they're split up. It reminds me a little bit. There's been a couple movies made about this that I watched in a former life. You know, Breakfast Club, where you have these five people. I don't recommend this movie, but you have these five students who are serving a Saturday detention, and they all come from a very different background. And so much so that they don't even really talk, but they get to know each other throughout the movie, and it ends all good with Judd Nelson walking out and raising his hand. I can't remember, on a football field. Am I describing it right, Kyle? I would ask Barry, but I don't think he knows.
Well, why do you assume I would watch such? Yes, that's good, Scott.
Well, you know, and you know, we get that in high school. We see that sometimes in life, but should that be the way it is in church? And should there be clickiness in church? And I do think that in one way or another, a lot of people have experienced clickiness in churches. So I want to talk today and get your guys' thoughts on, you know, the is that proper? What is the, you know, what is a proper view of that? How do we handle that in churches? So I want to make a distinction, though, before we get going. Kyle, I am not good at alliteration like you are. I had 3 out of 4, or 2 out of 3, I'm sorry. 2 out of 3of these words are alliteration. You know, you have factions in church, which we read about in the Bible. We have friendships in church. And you read about friendships in the Bible. And then you have cliques, and cliques is spelled with a silent F. So for the alliteration there.
Faction could have worked there.
Factions could, but I do think factions are a little bit different.
It's true.
Factions are usually, and I want to talk about this, are usually made up of ideological commonality.
That's fair.
Wow. I really appreciate that precision.
Yeah, so every now and again, right? I can do
well,
something.
I think that's your prosecuting attorney's mind coming into play here, making distinctions.
Yeah, so factions we have in church, and Paul says, you know, there are factions and they're necessary. And so, you know, we're not really talking about factions here. So I don't want to talk about people who may have line up ideologically one way or another, although I do think factions can lead into cliques in some respects. But how do we distinguish and how do we deal with this idea of cliques versus friendship? So let me ask you this. Have either one of you ever been in a church setting? And I don't mean like a congregation necessarily, but just a church setting, a conference, a get together where you just felt like, man, this is really cliquey. And, you know, I don't know where I belong. They're not going to accept me. Have you guys ever felt that?
I know that. Well, yes. The answer is yes. I know that you extended the parameters of that to conferences or just a Christian setting. I would say I've experienced that in churches before. And I guess, you know, and I'm sure we'll get more into this. I think people probably feel it a little more sensitively within like a congregation as opposed to a conference or some other context. But the simple answer to your question is, yeah, I've experienced it.
I have as well. When you said conference, I did think about when we, as new Reformed Presbyterians, went to our first international conference. It was a bit overwhelming because it was clear there was just so many family ties and bonds between people. And I'm not saying that it was anything wrong about that, but you just certainly felt that, wow, I don't have this depth of history, friendship, knowledge of people. So I remember my wife especially feeling that way because I had got to know people outside our congregation a little bit more than she had. So certainly.
Yeah. And I think kids particularly feel this in congregations and in those kind of settings where they don't know where they belong. They don't fit in. They're new. And that can be really difficult on children. Especially in a church setting where they should be going and being a part of a family and they feel like they're outside of something.
You know, though, Scott, I would actually say, so I appreciate the sensitivity to children there, but I would say just by means of experience and observation, you know, being affected by what you might call cliques in the church is not just something that children might feel sensitively. You know, I remember when Rachel and I were newlyweds, we had moved to a new area, we joined a church, and, you know, here we are, we're a little bit of fish out of water, and it was a very cliquey church. And as young adults, we experienced that. I have found, again, more by observation and conversations with people, older people will often begin to feel this in the church, whether they're new in the church or whether, you know, maybe the demographics are shifting a little more to the younger side. I've seen, you know, empty nesters, even retired couples kind of saying, you know, the church has cliques and we just don't really know where we fit. So I just want to say that I think across the demographics, it is something that can be felt and experienced by people.
And I appreciate all of that, Kyle. And I do. I will concede that it is felt acutely by all ages, but it's not something that's unique to adults. It affects everybody at every age. And the nice thing about kids is usually if you're young enough, you're not going to have it. It's when they get a little bit older. Yeah, I love seeing kids because they'll get together, they know somebody for 2 minutes, and they're playing like they're best friends, and they've been friends forever, which I think it's a beautiful thing. And then they get older, and that all goes away. But I do want to talk about something because, you know, when you consider Jesus and his ministry, and particularly his relationships with his disciples, he had a special relationship with the 12. And yet within the 12, he had a special relationship with just a few. And so how do we distinguish, you know, just like close friendships from being cliquey? And I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, you're both pastors. And so when you're at church, you probably feel like you're being pulled in all different directions. And I imagine you both have some close friends, maybe not in the church, maybe in the church, but you know, there's those special relationships that you need to have as a pastor in particular, but you don't want to seem cliquey. So how do you, and just practice, how do you maintain that balance of, yeah, I have friendships like Jesus had with a couple of the disciples who took them away, especially versus having a godly relationship with everybody in the church?
One of the courses I teach here in pastoral theology, I look at the pastor in his different roles, but one of the lectures I do is on the pastor's a friend, that he has to have friends and make friendships with people in the congregation. It's just, you know, Jesus said that he gave his life, greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. Jesus had friendships. And as you're pointing out, that's one way to view the disciples. They were his friends. And as you've mentioned, there was even an inner circle of Peter, James, and John who had special experiences with him. John seems to be a man that describes a special bond that he and the Lord had. So I do believe the Lord is closer to some of his disciples than others. And I think that is reflective of just the nature of friendships. You're just going to have some friends that are just very close to you that you can open up very deeply with, and others that are maybe along that lines, but not quite, you know, not quite as close to you. And it just sort of radiates from there. So I do think that in this discussion that we don't want to, in trying to get rid of the, you know, the evil of a clique, destroy the idea that we as Christians have friends and we have closeness of relationships with others. And one of the things that I would begin in terms of how to distinguish, I think healthy friendships maintain an openness to the involvement of others. So a clique is when you're enjoying friendships and then someone else comes and you just sort of circle the wagons. You're not going to let this person in. You're not going to interact with them. You're not going to be warm toward them. You start being exclusive in your friendship. And I think we have to really guard against that in the church, where we're really called to love. We're to practice hospitality, which, you know, in the Greek literally means this love of strangers. We're always to be having this open-heartedness toward others. And so I think that's one of the things we have to be careful in enjoying close friendships with people, that we have to do that in a way that's not putting stumbling blocks or building walls between us and other people.
I think as I hear Scott, your question and what Barry is saying, you know, I don't always like the word balance, because I think it's overused. But there is a real tension here. And the real tension is that on the one hand, we are always to be welcoming. Right. We are to be, you know, you even think, for instance, in Romans 14, and I know we're not talking about factions, but Paul speaks about the strong and the weak. And his emphasis is you all need to be welcoming of each other. And the church is to be a place where that is lived out, a welcoming, inviting, hospitable, you know, a place where people really feel that they are part of the organism that is the church. And all the one another's and the reciprocal duties that are expected of us in all of that. And there's never a credible, warrantable excuse to not be seeking to fulfill those one another's. At the same time, there is that tension that Barry is highlighting, that there are friendships, and friendships are often fostered not simply by, you know, kind of shared interests and hobbies, which is usually or a stage in life, which is usually where they start. But, you know, I think of some of my closest friends. They are people with whom Rachel and I have shared some of the deepest, most painful moments of life, some of the most joyful periods of life. And there is an intimacy and a fellowship that is formed in that kind of a thing. And it's good when a church, it's good when a congregation has people that have those kinds of relationships, that have developed, you know, maybe even beyond just, you know, in Christ, all those wonderful one another's, to our lives are very woven together. And that creates the tension, because on the one hand, yeah, you gotta be inviting, you gotta be welcoming, you've gotta be loving to anybody and to everybody. But I also think that sometimes we need to moderate some of our expectations and just realize, you know, friendships are formed both with quality but quantity of time spent with one another. And sometimes, you know, and I found, you know, when Rachel and I have been in a position where we feel like, oh man, you know, this church has a lot of cliques, we don't really feel like we fit in all the time, it's easy to play the self-pity card. And I think we have had to step back at times in our life and go, but you know what? These people have very shared histories. You know, these people, their kids grew up together, or they've suffered loss and grief together, and they have something. We envy that in a good, I hope a godly kind of envy. You know, we want that. We want that in our lives. But I think that's one of the major challenges that sometimes faces congregational life.
Yeah, I remember reading an article years and years ago where the author said, you know, if you go into a church and you don't feel welcome, the problem is you, not the church. Now, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that wholeheartedly, but there is a sense that Kyle, we, like you said, you know, you have to have this wisdom and this insight to know of the, you know, the intimacies that are shared there within the church. But that does get to my next question, which is how can we identify and differentiate between this, you know, friendship, fellowship kind of, or you know, companions that we have versus becoming cliquey. So what are some of the things that we need to be looking out for in a church to make sure that we are not being cliquey, even though we may have that deep fellowship and friendship with one or two people in the church?
I would say, again, going back to something I said earlier, I think a click is when you're not welcoming to others. So you're in a conversation with some people and someone else walks up and you just get silent, or you don't draw them into the conversation. That would happen, you know, at a church where there's clicks, where you are spending time with friends, and that's good to do, but that's all you're doing. Like you're having them over, they're having you over, and you're not really expanding your circle or taking times to host other people in your home in a church. I guess to what Kyle was saying, you're failing to practice the one another's throughout the congregation. I think that's another sign of becoming cliquish. You know, every time the service ends, you're gravitating toward just your special friend group rather than looking around and seeing who's the visitor, who's that person who's lonely. I think one of the people that can really suffer in congregations are single adults. And I would say it can be both men and women, but particularly women can get very lonely. And, you know, all the moms are sitting there talking about their children or, you know, that kind of a thing. And they're not drawing that other person in. That's another thing that I think can happen, is you discuss certain topics and you lack a sensitivity to the life state of the person with you. So again, you're all sitting there talking about babies, and here's this woman who is not had a child and longs for a child, but you just keep talking and you don't think about how your conversation could be impacting her. So those are some ways, real quickly, I would say that you could be acting in a click-like manner unintentionally. I think it can really just be our blind spots. And I know I have blind spots. I know that there's been times where I've had my eyes open to, oh wow, I was not really acting like a Christian there. I wasn't really representing Christ in this situation because I wasn't seeing the need of another person. And so we need to always be examining our lives, I think, in this regard.
I think too, you know, I especially think of this in terms of what is my posture? What are my interactions more in the corporate setting? So, right, there is a place in what you call the life of the church for very close, very intimate friendships. But then there's also a context for where those friendships do best. You know, and so, and I'm not meaning to speak here against hospitality, but, You know, just very practically speaking, you know, if you've got a church fellowship meal, you know, that probably is not the place for your very intimate friendship to be expressing itself in the sense, you know, kind of like what Barry said, you know, you're not going to, you know, oh, how about the three of us sit over here in this corner and we're going to talk about all of our inside life together and all these things, or we're going to segregate and we're going to come over here and, you know, good luck to everybody else finding somebody, you know, in a corporate setting like that. Is not, if I can put it this way, and I'm trying to figure out the right words to use, but that's not the context for the intimacy of friendship. The friendship can thrive and flourish, you know, outside of the sight of everyone else, and that's okay. But in those corporate settings, you know, who do you gravitate to? You know, who are you striking conversations up with? Are you being mindful, you know, that, I mean, you don't have to be a big church for people to feel lonely. You know, as a pastor, this is a realization that you come to often, is that in almost any size congregation, you're going to have lonely people. There's no escaping it. And sometimes some of the loneliest people you would never even imagine, well, that's a really lonely person. And I just think as Christians and in the corporate setting, the fellowship, the worship of the church, like, we should be mindful of that. And if in those settings, you know, you're using that context for your more intimate friendships, I think it begins to kind of, that would be to me at least a little bit of a warning flag. Maybe we're being a little clicky here, because in this context, we are more concerned about our friendship context, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. One thing I would just follow up with on what Kyle's saying is maybe more anecdotally, but I just remember in our ministry in Kokomo, Scott, we had rescue. We would sometimes call them the mission men, although we were encouraged not to refer to them in that way, but men that would come from the rescue mission. And often when you went down to the fellowship meal, they would be at a table together, and sometimes it would be easy to just let them do that. And we really talked about trying to invite, you know, people to our tables or going to their table, so we don't get into that situation where Paul rebuke Peter for not associating with the Gentiles. And so I think we have to be very intentional about that. There's been times I can recall when we're driving as a family to church, and you have to instruct your children, like, oh, there's this new family coming, and that girl hasn't been brought into your, you know, your age group, your girl group. I want you to invite her to sit with you at lunch, and we pray for, you know, that family. So you have to, I think this is where we have to train people. You can do it on the family basis. I think sometimes I've noticed among youth, I've had to go and talk to the youth because they weren't really doing a very good job of welcoming new people. And then even times you have to have some conversations with some of the adults, because you find out that there's some people who are hurting in the congregation because they feel left out. And you have to try to find ways to make that known so that that pain can be overcome.
And I think, you know, Barry, you've implicitly said this, but just to emphasize it, right? This is a responsibility that belongs to the membership. You know, so when Barry's sitting there saying, you know, sometimes we need to, you know, in the car, we had to coach our kids, you know, that's not because Barry's pastor and they're the pastor's kids. That's because this is what life in the church, this is what life as members is to look like. It's not, you know, in that sense, it's not simply the pastor's response. Now, hopefully pastors are a little more sensitive and elders are a little more keen to those things. And yet, you also don't want just the pastor or the elders, the leadership, being the ones that are doing those things, because that still communicates something to people. These are things that the membership of the church is responsible for, because we're all responsible for the one another's. And I think that's a very, very important thing too. It's, you know, I imagine I'm a pastor, so, you know, I can't really put myself in the shoes of just a non-pastor member, but it might be easy to assume, well, you know, the pastor, he's extroverted and it's his job. He's supposed to make those connections and to assume it's going to be taken care of. And I think that the point is, no, you don't assume. Like, you show the welcoming love of Christ to anybody and everybody within the circumference. And if we all committed to that, like if everybody just said, I'm going to do my part, you know, what a way to build up an actual very healthy fellowship in the church.
I totally agree with what Kyle's saying, but just to add, I think this is where, as preachers, when we're dealing in the epistles or other places in the scriptures where it's describing the body of Christ and the variation and the different gifts that different members of the church bring, I think this is something where we have to emphasize this, that we have to, you know, Christ came to break down all the dividing walls, and cliques are dividing walls. And so we have to make sure that we're not allowing that to fester or to be fostered in any way in our congregation. I think that's a way where pastors could be sensitive to this very real dynamic. It's just a very practical way to address it.
And I appreciate that. And, you know, I think one of the difficult things is, you know, when you're around people you're comfortable with, you just assume, well, anybody can come and join us, but just by virtue of your behavior, your camaraderie, that there might not be that comfort level for a new person to come up and engage and join in. There's this perception, I think, sometimes, because I've had it, where, you know, they wouldn't, if they wanted me, they'd ask me, they're having fun, they don't want me there. And that was on me. So I think I bore some of that responsibility in assigning this clickiness to people who probably were not intending to, just by virtue of their friendship and their familiarity, they were able to have this conversation. I would have been more than welcome to come in and join them, but I just felt like I don't want to go intrude and woe is me. And, you know,
right. So, well, exactly. Right. And that's part of, I'd mentioned earlier, but it's part of that self-pity, right? Like it is also easy to project. It is easy in a situation, you know, like nobody likes being the new kid in the lunchroom. It's ridiculously uncomfortable, but we can easily build up in our minds, well, maybe these people aren't actually that friendly. And, you know, and we ourselves withdraw, just like you're saying, Scott. And I think, again, I think it's important. Everybody needs to be committed to these things. Even if you're the new person, you know, I've sometimes encouraged people who have complained, you know, your church is really clicky and things like that. You know, you gotta gently prod them along, but you kind of at some point say, well, you know, what have you put in? Like, you know, have you availed yourself of opportunities that are there? You know, what have you done? Have you thrown your weight in? You know, and when people have said, you know, the church is kind of clicky and we're thinking of leaving, you know, as a pastor, I say, you know, I kind of wish you wouldn't, because if it's true that our church is clicky and you leave, you know, you're walking out the door when you could help begin to facilitate the remedy to that clickiness. And for lack of a better, you know, it's going to sound so trite and cheesy, but, you know, be the kind of member that you want others to aspire to be like, and, you know, throw your weight behind that, you know, pour yourself into that kind of a service. And, you know, at the end of the day, if people don't reciprocate, they don't reciprocate. But what a wonderful thing if you help foster that kind of a change.
Yeah, Kyle's reminding me of just sometimes coaching my own children who were feeling left out by a friend group to sow, you know, just sow seed. What you just need to sow abundantly. So keep sowing, and it may not meet with immediate response, but if you keep sowing, somewhere it's going to land and you're going to start developing friendships with people. So keep sowing, and eventually you'll reap.
Yep. I always tell my kids, I have introverted kids, and, you know, I always try to remind them in so many different contexts, but it's especially true, Lord willing, I hope it's true, in the context of the church. You know, very few people dislike a nice person, you know, like very few people dislike a nice person. And if you introduce yourself, you get to talking to people anyway.
We are running really close on time. I know that we're on a hard deadline for some people. And we've talked about this a little bit, but how can we address, and I'll close with this, how can we address as elders, as pastors, as laymen, if we see clickiness in the church, what are some things that we can do to address that and nip it in the bud before it, you know, creates problems in the church? And we've already talked about some, but, you know, if there's anything else we can do.
I mentioned preaching. There's also praying. There have been times where I've sought to organize prayer times, and, you know, I don't announce it or But you're really trying to shepherd things towards different people getting together. And when you start praying, when you go, I'll go before the throne of grace, there's just a special bond of love that can deepen between people and again, break down some of these barriers. So I think prayer is a huge part of the answer to this. And if you're in a church where you're feeling left out, that's where you really need to start, is asking the Lord to overcome it and to give you, as Kyle suggested, Scott suggested, positive ways to overcome it in the strength of the Lord.
One of the things, and I don't know how effective it is, but hospitality can go a long way in beginning to foster relationships. And especially if you're a person, and everybody in the church is to practice hospitality. I know it's a qualification for the eldership in particular, but the apostle in Hebrews says we all have to be hospitable to one another. And I have found that, trying to sometimes have hospitality where you invite multiple families over who may not always be interacting, and to say, why don't you come? We'll come into my living room and we'll eat at our table, and we'll try to begin just fostering and building some of these relationships. That helps. I think it's just a very practical way to do it. Is to get people connecting in the church that don't naturally maybe gravitate toward one another, who might not have all the shared interests. So, you get the bookworm and you get the sports fan together. And it's like, hey, let's just, let's sit down and we'll bear it. We'll figure out a way to survive the evening. No, just kidding. So I think that's just another very practical way to do it. Where you begin to see it, begin saying, hey, we want to have you guys over, and we're inviting this family over too. And I think that helps foster some good things.
I mean, I think those are great thoughts, great insights, a good discussion. I think it's one that we probably don't have enough, is to, make sure that we are including everybody in our fellowship, and having those good godly relationships at the corporate level, as well as encouraging people to join in and be a part of the church and not exclude anybody unnecessarily. So I appreciate your discussions, your thoughts. We do appreciate you listening. We thank you for the question that has sparked some great discussion on this. And we thank you for joining us at 3GT. We would encourage you to write with any suggestions or questions at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. And we look forward to joining you next time on 3GT.